If you want to understand what is going on in the world of startups, development, programming, and plain old creativity when it comes to Berlin, at some point you've got to talk about spaces and places. Now forget what you know about the tech world of cubicles and nondescript office buildings where the boss can decide to take your swing line stapler. Today, we're diving into three spaces that embody the new kind of inspiring workplace, spaces that are redefining how work is done, and in the process, are making Berlin the international authority in creative spaces. We begin today with an overview, the observations of startup guru Kaylee Moore. And from there, we go underground into the legendary space station known as Seabase to speak with E-Punk. In part three, we'll go back above ground to hear about co-op and learn about co-working spaces. And finally, we'll head over to Raumfahrt Agentur in Wedding, one of the newer and more unique hacker spaces in this city. All this on the road to understanding an essential piece of the puzzle for how and why Berlin became Europe's Silicon Alley. From Wikimedia Deutschland, I'm Mark Fonseca Renderu, and this is Source Code Berlin. It's no easy task to try and keep track of the ever-growing number of startups in a city like Berlin. With those startups comes a whole slew of co-working offices, hacker spaces, cafes where people can be found working together every day, anytime. Kaylee Moore has made it her business to observe and report about startups in Berlin. Over the past 2 years, her website, Berlin Startup Girl, has become a go-to place for anyone looking to start anything in this town. To start today's program, I asked her to explain the popularity and prevalence of co-working spaces.
Berlin is the least expensive capital city in Western Europe, and I would say probably the least expensive tech hub that I've seen in the world. And so that means you have a ton of co-working spaces because it's just a lot more affordable to start them. And so you don't have to have big companies sponsoring. You could get together with your friends and basically create a space and do some marketing. And there's really low overhead. So you have, like you said, lots of hacker spaces, lots of co-working spaces, but you also have a lot of cafes that have kind of become dedicated tech hubs in themselves.
It seems like there's something particularly social about everyone, and even in lines of work that you would say, oh no, you know, programmers or coders, they're not particularly social. Yet many put themselves in these places, in these locations. They go to these meetups. I see like a lot of listings for meetups in Berlin.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a easy city to network in because even though there is a growing tech scene, it still is fairly small compared to places like the Valley or San Francisco. And so a lot of these people are out and about networking, and it's just easier to do so from co-working spaces.
What is your favorite, if you have a favorite, co-working space or related in Berlin?
I'm a little bit biased. I was with Startup Bootcamp Berlin. I was an entrepreneur in residence with them last year, and they have a space called the Rainmaking Loft. They actually just expanded it, and it's gorgeous. So they have a bar now, which is an insane bar, and they have a juice bar, and it's actually pretty hard to find relatively healthy food in Berlin, so I'm a big fan. And it's just gorgeous, and Alex Farset, who is the head of Startup Bootcamp Berlin, just does a really nice job of pulling in international people. So if you go there to have a desk, or if you just go there to meet friends for coffee, to network, there's always really interesting, creative people from all over the world who are there.
Do people stay? The ones in the co-working spaces, are they there in a year?
Berlin is a very transient city. And so with the Rainmaking Loft, it is Startup Bootcamp is housed there. And so they do one program a year and it's 3 months. So that's why I was there. And I think out of the 10 teams, there's probably only two that are still at the Rainmaking Loft. But so it's nice because there is an international international focus. And so you have people who are coming to Berlin to either build their product or look for funding, and then maybe they go back to their home country, or maybe they want to expand to the US market. So yeah, Berlin's pretty transient in kind of whatever co-working space you're in. The factory, which I'm sure you'll be talking about at some point because that is the hot space of today, they have some bigger name startups like SoundCloud, which they clearly aren't going anywhere. But I would say for the smaller co-working spaces, yeah, it's kind of in and out. But that's nice because it gives you an opportunity to grow or to meet new people.
So I see a connection here. There's the... On the one hand, the city itself is low cost, so what it takes to start up whatever project you're working on would also be less than in other places in the world. And then it seems instead of going for the traditional office space or even maybe working from home, which I guess has its drawbacks, the option in Berlin is let me find a space. And that's not just co-working spaces, right? Let me find a little corner in a hacker space. I'll get my start there.
Exactly. Like for me, so I am a marketing and PR consultant, essentially. I help European companies expand internationally to the US market. And so I often will stop by my clients' offices, maybe once a week, maybe once a month, but I hate working from home. I just get too bored there. And so I am not officially a member of any of the city's multiple co-working spaces because I like bouncing around and there's so many amazing cafes. There's one in my neighborhood called Agora Collective, and it's probably the best known co-working space for truly creative. The building is insanely beautiful and they have this garden. And so that's a really nice place to work in the morning. And then there's St. Oberholz, which is the most famous, I would say, in Berlin. And that is a hub in itself. If you go in there on any day of the week, I would say 80% of the people working there, and it's a huge cafe, are people in the Berlin startup scene.
And I guess, thankfully, in terms of the urban culture of Berlin, people don't chase you out, be it cafe owner or...
Oh, no, not at all. You could kind of stay there all day and just have a cappuccino if you really wanted to, but they do have phenomenally good food. So I'd recommend whatever soup they're having that day.
Yeah. But this whole culture, co-working and, you know, not being home, but not having an office, this is something that's going on all over the world as well. I mean, you get to travel. Are you seeing this pattern? Is it that Berlin is being learned from, or is it just some natural evolution? What do you see?
I think more people are becoming freelancers. Like there was some study that just came out, the freelance economy, it's going to be like something like 40%. Don't quote me on that. And then in the next couple of years, it's just a lot more feasible to be a freelancer and people want more flexibility. And so I think when you start seeing people joining that freelance community, you don't want to just work from home. You want to be a member of a community and you want to be able to bounce ideas off of people who are in your field. And you aren't getting to do that on a daily basis since you don't have a dedicated office. So as we see more freelancers popping up in the startup world, we're seeing more co-working spaces that cater to those people. Yeah. And same thing with, you know, when you're launching a startup, most of the time you're bootstrapping it in the beginning, or you have a little bit of seed funding, you don't want to go out and blow a ton of money on an office is you really don't know if you're going to be there in the next 3 to 6 months. So it makes more sense to get a couple of desks. And as you grow and as you expand, you can get more space or move to a different location.
Is there any truth to the observation that I hear a lot? So again, as far as you know, that a lot of businesses start with far less in a place like Berlin than they might say in San Francisco.
I think most companies, when you're just starting out, like most companies are probably bootstrapped. It is significantly easier to raise money in San Francisco or California or the Valley or just the US in general than it is in Berlin. Berlin investors aren't great at being risky. I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, no value judgment on that. But it's significantly easier to raise money in the States.
Aren't great at being risky. They don't go for it.
The burden of proof when you're raising money in Germany versus raising money in the States, it's a lot more. They want you to, to raise seed money in the States, you just have to have a good concept and a good team, right? Like they know that you're going to find product market fit. But in Germany, they like to see more than a good team. They want to see product market fit. They like to see the product already partially done, if not fully complete. And that's really hard to do when you're bootstrapping. So, I mean, it's starting to change. We're seeing more money being raised in Berlin, and we actually are seeing more seed rounds, but they still are significantly smaller than in the U.S. Like, if you look at Series A in Germany versus Series A in the U.S., we're talking like $10 to $20 million differences.
Yeah. And interesting also that even after having whatever success, you pointed out SoundCloud, that some companies don't move out. You know, it's not that it's necessarily a first step and then you move on always. Some companies stay around in the co-working space scene.
Oh, yeah. Berlin is an amazing city, not just to create a startup, but to build it and continue to grow. And especially if you can get outside funding. And now you're seeing that more and more. Like, Berlin companies are now, for the first time in the last year, starting to raise money from the UK and from the US. So you don't have to, you know, build a company, get some seed funding and move to the US. Like, you have companies like ResearchGate, which is a German company who's doing very well. Bill Gates has invested in them. Iyad, their founder, is really all about staying in Germany. And I think we're going to see more and more of that.
Kaylee Moore is a Berlin-based marketing strategist for startups. You can find her at berlinstartupgirl.com. As one of the first hacker spaces in the world, all conversations about collaborative working in Berlin should involve the incomparable CBase. Almost 20 years since it was founded, the list of communities and projects that are based here is long and celebrated. Even the German Pirate Party, despite its fall from grace, was founded here. But before the talk of famous and perhaps infamous projects that came out of this place, we need a local guide, like E-Punk, to explain the intergalactic tale of how this place came to be, how it's changed over the years, and what it does today.
Well, the C-Base is a space station which crashed 3.5 billion years ago onto planet Earth after forming planet Earth. And we're a bunch of people who try to reconstruct this space station.
So this is an ongoing process. This room that we're in is part of it?
The rooms that we are in are a segment of it, yes. The C-Base is used to be a lot bigger, and we're trying to expand. But right now we have the C-Base Reconstruction Project 3, which is here in Rungestraße. And we're trying to find and reconstruct new artifacts and reconstruct the programming of the space station.
So is that how, you know, in reconstructing the programming of the space station, is that how you come into contact with and start to even have similar people as in the world of, say, technology, the connection to the hacking world? How did that all get connected?
The problem is everything you do in Germany, you have to found a club for that. And so there is a club, the C-Base e.V. The problem is that nobody believes that we are actually reconstructing a station. And so we kind of have a camouflage club, which is the C-Base e.V. And we do education in software, hardware, and networking. So that's what we are officially doing. And that's what it appears to the public what's happening here.
Okay. And how do you fund all of this, especially the education, for example?
We fund ourselves by the members that we have. We have a member fee, and we have a bar where we sell mate and drinks, and we get a donation once a while, and sometimes we do rent out the space.
And officially, in what year did these initial discoveries start to happen, which in essence was the founding of the current C-Base reconstruction?
That was 19 years ago in 85 in an old cellar in Berlin-Mitte in Oranienburger Straße.
Wow. So, and then this location, this site where we are now, started?
12 years ago, I think.
Okay.
With a break in between when the house was renovated.
Okay. And in that time, I mean, there have been a lot of changes in the city, in the neighborhood, I think. And I wonder about the changes in culture. How does Seabase compare, in your view, to hacker spaces that have appeared and other sort of spaces where people get together and code or whatever they do?
Good question. When the Seabase started, it was more from science fiction enthusiasts and artists and graphic artists and people like that. And then there was the thing with the internet, which was really bad in East Berlin. And when the Seabase got internet, there were more people who came here to use the internet. And so I think that was the point where it started to get more nerdy, more hacker affiliated. And by now we do have a lot of people here who actually do development in hardware and programming and playing around with Arduinos and BeagleBoards and Raspberry Pis. Other people do 3D graphics and video, and so there's a whole bunch of different persons meeting here, and we're trying to make like an interchange of art and technology and of course knowledge as well. So we do meet here and we try to teach people, but actually most people teach themselves by just doing projects and asking around for help. Like somebody has an idea and he says he can do the programming, but he can't do the hardware. Or some people say, I have a great idea, but somebody has to help me build a table around it or a big box or something like that. And so in the best cases, there's people from different departments, I'd say, who work together to create a new project.
What are some of your, I mean, famous is perhaps not the word, the achievements that the club is most proud of?
Well, some of the latest projects are, for example, the Mate Light, which is a big screen. It consists of 4x8 cases of empty Mate bottles that are wrapped in tinfoil and have a RGB LED in it. And so they basically make a 4x2 or 6x2 meter screen with a resolution of 40x16. It's in the main hall. You can have a look at it later. It was on the Congress. It was on different conferences. So many people know it. And there's this game of Ingress, augmented reality game that you play on a cell phone. And you have to actually walk around the city to play it. And so basically the playing field is the plan of the city, a street map. And so people here thought, well, we always meet here, so we want to have that thing in real life. And so they built a table with lots of LEDs in it, and the table has the city streets around the Seabase, I think 1x1 kilometer or something. And they actually found people who do the programming to go into the game and see what are the portals looking like at the moment, and lighting the LEDs by that, and somebody else built the table around it. Some other people actually wrote kind of an operating system. It's the no-flow control on which I think it's a, I don't want to say anything wrong, it's I think it's a BeagleBoard or a Raspberry Pi or stuff like that. Yeah, I think lots of the open source code from the Freifunk, from the free wireless community, it happened here because we have meetings here. We have a big meeting once a year, it's going like 4 days, and so developers from all over Europe meet here and get things done. I mean, it's not all sea-based projects, but we're a space station, so what we provide is space. Mm-hmm. And that space sometimes for other groups, for other people who come here and say, hey, we want to have a creative environment. And we do have kind of a creative environment. The place looks a bit like a space station. And we also have the infrastructure, like starting from toilets to power to nice lights to internet to possibility of recording and streaming and microphones for talks and presentations. And our main hall, our main room for, in the public area, seats about 80 people. And so we do have sometimes three meetings at the same time. The wireless people meet on one side, the lockpickers, the OpenStreetMap people. They just take a table and sit around and do their stuff. And we have the seminar room in which we sit in at the moment, which holds about 16 people. It's a little more quiet and closed. And so we had some bug finding parties here for the Ubuntu community, all that kind of stuff. And I think the interesting thing about the Seabase is that since there's so many different communities meeting here, they meet each other. Mm-hmm. So they don't stay with their own community, but they get in contact with other communities. And I think that's the interesting parts. If for example, the Ingress players meet the OpenStreetMap people because they have a lot of similar interests. We became a lot more tech orientated a few years ago. We stopped having parties. There was a time when we had a bigger parties once a month for something to pay our rent, but that was too loud for the neighbors, and so we stopped with that. And since then, more and more people came here and said, hey, that's an interesting place. I have a group for some software language which I would like to meet once a month or once a week. And so they ask if they come here. And they do. And with these visitors, we had more people and that said, well, I have an interesting idea as well. So they started coming. And so we got a lot more members in the last 3 years, and it's gotten a lot more technical, intellectual, building-wise.
And in this process, you become quite famous as a place, as a name. Has that been good or bad, or made things more difficult to function, or made things much easier?
As many people know, we had 2007. We had a debt of like 10,000 euros, something like that, which we had to pay taxes back, pay for electricity, stuff like that. And that was the point where we found out that we were actually, well known, famous around the community, around the world. And we got a lot of support from hackers from America, from all over the place. And that was when we realized that we were actually, I don't want to say a role model, but many people came here and said, hey, what you're doing is quite unique. And since then, we have lots of people from other places coming by and say, show me how that works. Oh, how do you make a community like that work? And so I think it was helpful that we got getting more publicity, even though there are some mainstream media who come here and they want to make some interviews and want to use it as a backdrop and want to do some photos for the generic hacker and stuff like that. And we try to keep those things out.
Is there something going on here that is quite unique to the rest of the world when it comes to open source development? There seems to be something going on, and I'm not sure why that is. Why here that so many people, even if they're not from here, they come here?
Well, for one thing, I think all software that gets developed here is open source. And that is because of practical reasons, because it's just working. The people who program, the people who code, they just like the idea of their code being used afterwards for different things, just as they use code from other people. And so it's pragmatic, and I think ideologic as well. Like most people I know here, they say open source is the way to go. And that's why open source things happen here. And we do kind of select the events here. So if Microsoft wanted to do something here, I don't think they'd make it. I mean, lots of people use Apple and Windows software as well. That's not a problem. Mm-hmm. But the things that are developed here are all open source, as far as I know. And we like it that the code is used in other projects. We had this multi-touch console. It's like a table where you could work with eight hands and play and do things. And a year later, there was a theater group from Italy, and they used the same technique, which we used to capture the hands, which was with an infrared camera and infrared lights. And they took the software and the hardware ideas and brought it on stage, and actually had dances on stage which were filmed with the infrared cameras, and they used the same software which we used for the multi-touch console for a big dance event. And I think that's one of the best examples how people who wrote the software never thought about the other purposes that it could be used for, but it happened. And I think that's best examples of why you should give your software an open source license, so that it can live on and develop. If people have an idea here, they want to share it. They don't want it to be a secret. I think if they want to make something which they can make money out of and which is really secretive and stuff, they probably find a better place for that. Most people here, they do have a university degree, or they're still studying. And I mean, the whole universal philosophy of teaching is that we're standing on the shoulders of giants, and we're doing the next little step. And I think lots of people know that, and lots of people have problems when they suddenly can't get their textbooks anymore, or they can't read scientific articles because the newspapers are getting, or the journals are getting too expensive. And so I think the open source idea is really in this place. It's anchored in this place.
Let's imagine that not everyone goes for the space theme motif for their workplace. In Berlin, you also have a long list of co-working spaces, which includes the very well-known names like Beta House, The Factory, and Co-op. In these places, you can find many different kinds of people, projects, and style of working. But what unites them all is that they can be found under one roof, often sitting at one big table. To get a better understanding of what goes on at co-working spaces, I spoke with Alex and Alex, who run Co-op Co-working Space, one of the most respected names in town. And what I found is a success story that might not fit traditional ideas of success.
Co-op is a space that's been open for nearly 5 years now. It was founded by Alex and Tilo, my employers. They were sharing their office, and decided, when they realized that they were co-working, decided to expand or move to a bigger space to have more desks available for more people. They're involved in the tech community here, And one thing that was important to them was to support the tech community by giving the space for free to the meetups and the events that take place here. This is still our policy 5 years later, which means that we have a lot going on in our calendar in the evenings. But co-working during the day means a lot of people, software and web developers mostly, although we don't have a hard rule about that, coming in to share the space with one another, to go to lunch to one another, to bounce ideas back and forth when they get stuck on something, rather than working at home. It's really useful to be able to talk to someone else who has a different perspective on it or other skill set to crack the problem that you're working on.
So, and how much do you ask in terms of requirements for having a space here? I mean,
We would like our members to pay. And other than that, we don't have any hard rules about who can work here. It's a coincidence that people, that mostly tech people work here. I mean, the space is known for having a lot of tech meetups, which is how we get a lot of people coming in. But certainly we don't have any sort of membership requirements along these lines. Everyone is welcome, and we've had translators and comic book illustrators and accountants work here as well. Welcome everyone.
Do people tend to stay for long term, and you see them month after month, year after year?
It's varied. There are certainly people who just drop by the city for a short while, are with us for a few days, and then disappear, never to be seen again. However, we have people who have been members for years, who come and go. They sometimes pause their memberships when they're working elsewhere and come back. But yes, it's a mixed bag.
What do you think is pulling people to this town in 2014?
Well, I think there are a lot of reasons. I mean, if I'm speaking about people who come to the space, Berlin is it's supposedly the tech capital of Europe at the moment. There are a lot of exciting startups here. People are there's a lot of work. I see job offers all the time. When I compare that to my friends who are not working in the tech branch, I see people really struggling to find work. But it's amazing that IT jobs are really being thrown at people.
The co-working part of co-op is maybe not so special. I mean, we have desks and Wi-Fi like everyone else does. I think the biggest difference is that we provide event space for free, and that's been used by tons of people. And so the kinds of people who come here and the amount of people who come here every week is a lot bigger than maybe other spaces who don't do this. So we have maybe 60 people who work here, but we have hundreds of people who come here for the events. And that's, I think, the biggest difference.
Yeah. The events, in fact, are what's most famous when people say, oh, I know co-op. It's not because they had an office here, but perhaps it's because they were at an event.
Yes. So we, like I said, we provide event space for free. And that means we have a meetup or some sort of event almost every night, or maybe even two or three in a night. Mm. And so, yeah, there's so many people who come here, mostly tech-related stuff. And they only know that we do events, but they don't even know that it's a co-working space, maybe. Mm-hmm. The co-working space has always been almost a hobby for us. It actually isn't so easy to make a co-working space profitable, as in making you lots of money. It would have to be pretty big in order to do that. And so for us, it's always been about meeting new people, having a big, nice office, and also providing space for the community in Berlin. Not so much about the money, because we're not really making any, to be honest. Hmm.
Different kind of mentality going into it, yeah. Yeah, because I can think of other cities in the world and other situations where people think, well, yeah, I'm going to provide space, but I'm going to figure out a way, you know, to make this a big profit.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's actually not so easy. And if you make it so big that you can make enough money from it, it's going to be a very different space because it's more anonymous and lots more people. And so by keeping it small, we have a community of people that we know, and everyone talks to each other. And that's for us as tech people, there's easier ways to make money than a co-working. So it's actually, yeah, it doesn't make any sense for us to try to turn co-op into a big profit.
I think it's interesting that maybe old assumptions about anyone working in as a developer or a programmer is that they're not social, or they don't know how to be social, that they're hidden in a basement or of their parents' house somewhere. And here, the evidence points to people who are actually quite social.
Yeah, I think that what you just said about developers maybe not knowing how to be social, that could be something. I mean, here, the people who come here and work here, they do work most of the time, so there's actually not much talking going on during the day, to be honest. And then obviously there are breaks and lunch and stuff. Lunch is almost the biggest daily event we have here. There's always a group of almost maybe 10 people going together, so it's sort of nudging people maybe into being more social even. But I think, I mean, everyone wants to be at least somewhat social, and yeah, we maybe provide the opportunity for some. I mean, as opposed to being alone at home, where obviously you're not going to meet anyone. So when we started the space a few years ago, it was very small, but it grew quickly, and we were very quickly overwhelmed with just management stuff, like sending people invoices and making sure they pay, which we didn't like doing, and so we didn't do it, which meant we didn't make any money from it. And so that started Cobot, which is a web-based software for running this place, and also a lot of others by now, by the way. And so that's actually our source of income now. We make money by renting out software, i.e. Cobot, to other co-working spaces.
So in a way, something else came out of this co-working space, even for you, the people who run it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, not just this, but it's kind of funny how we started co-working, not making money from it, and now it still does provide our income, even though it wasn't the space directly, but something that came out of it. So it's great for us. Yeah, so Co-op is pretty well known by now to all sorts of developers. So if people come here for a conference or something, they're probably going to end up here on the couch at least one day. And we're not really doing any official open source work or anything in the space, but through all the events we have here, there's so many tech meetups and things related to that. And all the people who do open source or all the developers come to Co-op at some point and learn here and share and also work on things. We do also workshops and just coding sessions and all that. So it's a big influence here. One of the examples is the Open Tech School, which was sort of founded here. So Open Tech School teaches people to code. They organize meetups where you can just come and start coding. And yeah, we didn't really create that ourselves, but by providing the space and sort of getting the right people together, it just started on its own, which is great for us.
Yeah, interesting side effect. You're very much involved in the community on different levels.
Yeah, lots of side effects, to be honest. Like, not so much as planned. Most of it just comes out of it at some point. We've been here for 5 years almost now, so we can just sit here and wait and something's going to happen because some people come here. I would say Berlin is very diverse in the people who come here. I mean, obviously there's the whole startup and money-making scene where you come and you work your ass off and then you hope for some fortune to come your way or some exit. But there's also lots of people, and I think those are even more, who want to come here to either party and see the clubs or whatever, but also, yeah, maybe just to enjoy life a little bit more and not work all the time, but still work on something cool and still make good money maybe, but also have something else in life than just work. A good life is maybe even a better goal or more ambitious than just money. So however you want to see it. Berlin is not San Francisco. It's not the place where the millionaires are born. But it still is a great city, and I wouldn't want to live in San Francisco. I want to stay here. So.
Yeah, very well. Okay, well, Alex, thanks so much for having me as a visitor here and taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
As a fan of bicycles, abandoned urban swimming pools, and machines that do cool stuff, when someone first described to me Raumfahrt Agentur, a former tanning salon turned hackerspace, I knew I was in for a treat. As I walked into this unique space, past a row of e-bikes plugged into the wall, past a bevy of blinking lights on my way in, I was invited to sit down in what was obviously a plane seat from the 1980s, looking very economy class. Here, they've traded watered-down orange juice for club mate, and instead of an in-flight movie, I'm shown some of the latest projects this space is housing. My host for this exploratory visit, the one and only Gizmo. People have heard, perhaps, of hacker spaces, but this is a hackerspace on a whole new level. I have never seen such a unique and multi-featured place that's called a hackerspace. How did this happen?
Well, it developed over years. We started Raumfahrt Agentur in 2008. And the situation you experience here is probably this wonderful scenario of the old solarium we're in. We're inside a studio, solar studio, an old one. It's shut down. And so we use the available rooms and booths for our multi-purpose workshop, community workshop. And it's really an amazing infrastructure here. We are in Wedding in old public baths. So over there, there's a big old pool, 30-meter swimming pool. And it's a fancy building. And the designated solarium has many nice features we might talk about later.
Yeah, you have to imagine it, dear audience. You walk into this building, on this side of the building anyway, and being the solarium, it has these little cabins, little individual rooms. And each room has something different. Someone's work, someone's focus is either one type of machine or one type of system, even a different area altogether of focus. So it's very diverse in terms of interest. I mean, we're sitting here in a recording studio, which is part of the space. I look over your shoulder and there are guitars, and over my shoulder there are mixers. I mean, this is not your mama's hackerspace. How does it become so specialized? Because the old model of hackerspace was big, open, go.
Yeah, so Raumfahrt Agentur is structured with dedicated workspaces and workshops. Any kind of technique is here in place. So we have the machines. One hand, there's quite a nice thing to have a machine separated in a dedicated booth, like CNC cutter or the mill, CNC mill. And all the textile work is in a dedicated area, the 3D printing, and also the audio lab. This is a separation we use to structure the space. It's a co-work space with many people involved, but it's always focused on the topic, on the item of the dedicated area, not on the office or workplace or desk from someone in person. It's a collective situation where you have dedicated areas to keep all the equipment tidy, to get a daily use spaces, so people talk to each other, how to handle the area, keep the area in shape, and so that's why we have the situation with the rooms here in this manner. And what's a daily effect is forming groups, small groups around a dedicated technique area. So like half a dozen people are into the audio lab running music stuff or recordings, and then are a few people with 3D printing who also have an eye on this dedicated area and represented to other people, and also available if other people need help with a machine or with a area they want to use.
I even saw there was the bio lab, and so apparently a number of people who are very interested in biotechnology, and they're working on creating a space for it, which is, again, something I haven't seen. Well, I've heard about it in New York, a sort of open source or open biology space for people who aren't in school or in university. How did that happen here?
Same thing, especially a bio lab needs a dedicated area. You cannot integrate this in your flat at home or within a hackerspace with people hanging around, drinking beer, using notebooks, chilling. And no, it's not the area, not the situation where you can run a bio lab. So also same thing here. We have enough room, enough space to get a old toilet. It's basically the woman's toilet from before. We just use one and the other toilets got cleaned out. And so we have a close-able room, lock-able room, which can be painted and white ceiling for the biolab thing. Get clean walls, get everything dedicated to use it. And yes, there is a formation of more DIY bio people all over the world, like hackerspaces forming. So there's a big interest in in-house homegrown hacking on biotechniques, DNA analytics, some glowing algaes and stuff.
Is this a place where you called it a co-working space? So some people are making their... Well, it functions. It can function. Are some people making their living here and whatever it is that they do to earn a living? Or is this mostly just for hobby?
Well, I think it's not 50-50. There's a separation. From the beginning, it was clear that Raumfahrtagentur will also work as a commercial place. You run your business, where you run your machine for a business. We have like 4 or 5 people running dedicated commercial business inside, about the half maybe more hobby, interest centric, so it's a little separated, but yes, it's no problem to get a business running here. My part, my practical part, my hands-on part in this is a area for e-bikes. I build electronic bicycles, e-bike conversion kits for rickshaws, normal bikes, and so yeah, this is also kind of business case.
Mm-hmm. Yes, as soon as I walked in the entrance hall, I saw bikes charging. And I thought, aha, that bike has a wire coming out of it. I know what's going on here. What about the profile? I mean, I understand the interests. We've talked about them a bit without violating anybody's privacy. Of course, it seems like it's a place that's quite diverse. I mean, the world of hackerspaces has always been kind of looking at, you know, what's going on, even just men, women division, or where people are from. And obviously we're in Berlin, it can be quite international. Is that the case here as well? And how does it go in terms of gender?
Yes, it's not too diverse, but we have quite a lot of people, foreign people, visitors staying here in Wedding. It's always a big topic to have a hackerspace on your local vicinity and no far traveling, no daily rounds. So they're from the area, local area. One guy you met was building dome projection works and visual mappings. So he has some projection tools here, laser scanning for area recognition, area scanning, so stuff like this. So it's artists involved and diverse people from the IT. Sure, many IT people, geeks here, the background was running system administrations, network engineering, stuff like this. And need to get hands-on in the evening to get away from the computer thing.
Right, yeah. And there's a large element of art here. I see the whether or not people call themselves artists, I see a lot of artistic work going on.
Creative work, artistic work, and in the end, some projects, some ideas like testing, 3D printing, have new ideas, new techniques on 3D printing, probably will result in art. And yes, it's a very colorful situation with people here want to get creative things running, test it, try it, get inspiration. So rest of the public bars, the former bars, is used as an exhibition hall, basically. So we have art fairs over there. The neighbors, basically, is a house landlord, mm-hmm. is running art fairs there, exhibitions, concerts. Mm-hmm. And so we have a lot of contact to them, mm-hmm. get some support, some material, some tools.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's quite a cool neighborhood.
And in terms of how it works with members, this is a club. There's a membership. I'm kind of wondering how you fund yourselves, especially to do so many wonderful things.
Yes, it's a regular membership fee. It's monthly base. It's around 80 euros right now. You get key access and all the other things like infrastructure, insurance, power, all the things have to be paid. And we run it with a public, with a regular company. So it's not a club or a Verein thing. So it's regular business running, so infrastructure, renting the space, handles insurance things and all the other.
And I suppose with the type of climate you have in Berlin now, I'm thinking of people coming for in search or either of a project or with a project that they'd like to realize here and see come to fruition. Finding new members and having people being part of this is not a problem.
Oh, it's slowly growing, not too much. We have limited space. Also, right now, we are quite booked. It's around 25 people, some vicinity around. And yet one goes, maybe another emerges. It's shifting a little, but not too much. Not too much member entries or more growth because of this limitation of the room. It's about the space.
I see a good amount of tinkering. You yourself are doing some with bicycles. Well, the obsession with bicycles here is perhaps slightly different to other hacker spaces. How does this happen? Is this your doing?
Yes, and it's a big part of the funding. It basically started with my little bike shop. This bicycle conversion thing was needed a dedicated space. It was not possible to run this from your flat. Mm-hmm. So this is basically the beginning of Raumfahrtagentur in 2007-08. Historic situation for, get the bike shop running or the bike workshop running. And then things emerged to the first Raumfahrtagentur at Prenzlauer Berg. We were before from 2008 to 2011. Much smaller area, like 10 people starting to run this first instance. And so, it developed over 5-6 years now. Depends on what project, what thing it is. I have also concept for open hardware thing with the bicycles running and with software development. Sure, there's an in-depth thing with Freifunk. So we have antennas on the roof. It was a featured finance situation from free community project Freifunk e.V. Running a wireless distributed network in Berlin, over Berlin. Open source, wide fields, big range, but most of the things happening here are realized with an open source solution, like running the CNC mill or 3D printing especially, sure. We also have commercial dedicated solution. Brother is a stitching machine, is a regular Brother system. It's a lockdown Windows version. So you have it inside, but you can use it for creative things. In the development part, most of the stuff is shared. Not really released. We do not have much open source projects like regular Linux distributed packaging or something. So, but shared. That's a good point. We run Raumfahrtagentur website and our internal management with a truck. It's a little software platform for software developers. You can run tickets, milestone, and some blog news system. Mm-hmm. So everyone has an account there, get email, get information stuff. And a repository is also included. So you can get the config files for machines, internal handling, infrastructure details, some documentation about all the things in the space. So this is a platform where we share to knowledge.
And so when you look to the future here, even the short term, the future is bright?
Yeah, sure. The future is bright. It's not a Raumfahrtagentur when we do not want to go to space. And so future is bright, I think. We'll probably get some shit done here and get some rockets blast off.
All right, Gizmo, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to visit the place, and now it's going to become a regular stop of mine when I'm in Berlin.
Yeah, welcome all the time.
So what have we learned today? There are different ways to go about managing and nurturing the idea of working together in an interesting atmosphere. Whether you're surrounded by blinking lights and cutting-edge machines, or you're surrounded by eager and creative minds with nothing more than a laptop, the collaborative working scene in Berlin is alive, kicking, and growing in ways one might not expect. the reality that more people than ever in the world are becoming freelancers and otherwise working on their own has not automatically led to everyone rushing to co-working spaces. But in Berlin, it has. And the results speak for themselves. The good ideas, fruitful collaborations, and the spirit of not always working and instead relaxing or having a good time, these things continue to matter for many who have found their way to spaces like these. And everything points to this trend continuing, because in the end, it's not just that it makes sense. And everything points to this trend continuing, because in the end, it just makes sense. As Jack once said in the now painful to rewatch series Lost, live together, die alone. Or wait, maybe that's not quite the idea, but you get my point. Collaboration equals good for you. Some final vital information. Source Code Berlin is a Wikimedia Deutschland podcast. Find us at sourcecode.berlin or follow us on Facebook, Source Code Berlin, or on Twitter at SRC Code Berlin. Music today included the song Eclosion by Salmo. This podcast is published under a CC BY-SA 4.0 license and edited by me. Until next time, I'm Mark Fonseca Renderu. Thanks for listening. We are.